I'm John Wynn with SDPB News. A West River group is putting together a coalition to bring Missouri River water to the Rapid City region. Early estimates indicate the project could cost billions of dollars. SDPB's Seth Tupper reports.
The idea comes from the West Dakota Water Development District. The district covers Pennington County west of the Cheyenne River, including Rapid City. The district has a study in hand from researchers at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. They say the Rapid City region will eventually need more water than it gets from existing sources in the Black Hills. And they say the water could be drawn from the Missouri River. A pipeline from the river to Rapid City would stretch for 170 miles. It would cost up to $2 billion and would probably need congressional funding. Banner Associates is the engineering firm working with the district. The company is talking to cities and water systems that might want to participate in the project. At a meeting, project manager Cheryl Chapman told the Water District Board about those talks.
There's not official positions, if you will, but good comments ranging from, I've got quite a bit of good water, but I'm willing to participate, all the way to, I could use some water right now.
Over the next few months, Chapman says she'll help the Water District take the next step. That's meeting with interested cities and water systems, and then...
If there's agreement among the stakeholders, work toward a charter for a new group to further look into what a project might be to bring Missouri River water west of the river.
There are already a number of Missouri River pipelines in South Dakota, both West and East River. Rapid City gets water from wells and from Rapid Creek. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Seth Tupper in Rapid City.
A new initiative between several South Dakota businesses is trying to provide housing for rural communities in the state. The goal is to attract and retain South Dakotans and spur economic growth. SDN Communications, Avera Health, and First Bank and Trust are working together to fund a housing development initiative. The effort is spearheaded by East River Electric Power Cooperative. Tom Boyko is CEO of the co-op and says there's a lack of housing in rural South Dakota.
You have to have the people to run the businesses out in the rural areas. And in order to do that, they want housing. They need housing. And they need affordable, quality housing. And so when you want to get those jobs out there, if you want people out there, you have to have decent housing. And that's what this whole effort's about.
Boyko says East River Electric is looking to support initial housing efforts in Chamberlain. $4 million have been pledged to build multifamily apartment complexes as well as single-family homes. SDN Communications CEO Mark Schlanta says housing opportunities are few and far between outside of bigger cities.
Well, people can find a modern apartment, you know, in Sioux Falls, Rapid City, Mitchell, Aberdeen, you know, some of the larger communities. But as you go to some of the smaller communities, you know, finding perhaps some of the modern amenities that come with newer housing, you know, may not exist or may not exist in their price range. And we've seen it through the pandemic. You know, the workforce can be in a lot of different places.
Schlanta hopes the collaboration will motivate others to do the same towards rural development. Contributions from each business goes to revolving loans through the Rural Electric Economic Development Fund, which is administered by East River Electric. The Sioux Falls Area Community Foundation is establishing a fund to inspire leadership in the city's diverse population. It's called the Bridging the Gap Fund. SDPB's Nick Nelson has more.
The Community Foundation has teamed up with Leaders of Tomorrow, a 12-week leadership program designed to instill leadership skills among diverse backgrounds, to form the Bridging the Gap Fund. Andy Patterson is the president of the Sioux Falls Area Community Foundation. He says he looks forward to seeing positive changes as a result.
The investments from this fund are going to be guided by a group of individuals who are graduates of this program and wonderful examples of what the future of Sioux Falls looks like as far as leadership.
The foundation is forming an advisory committee of diverse city leaders to award grants to programs and organizations that train and mentor leaders from diverse backgrounds, provide resources for inclusion, and build connections through media, art, and storytelling. Antoinette Jensen is an executive office complaints manager for Wells Fargo in Sioux Falls and a member of the committee. She says learning leadership skills is important to achieve other life goals outside of work.
I have the confidence that I once lacked to go after things that I've always aspired to do. Being a fitness trainer was one thing. I had completed the training outside of Leaders of Tomorrow, but after attending Leaders of Tomorrow, I had that confidence to go after actually applying for that position. Now I'm happy to say that I am in the fitness industry at this time outside of my corporate world.
The Bridging the Gap Fund has already received a $50,000 gift from Midcontinent Communications. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Nick Nelson.
COVID-19 is hitting South Dakota's communities of color at a disproportionate rate. People of color make up 20% of the state's population, but 63% of COVID-19 cases. SDPB's Lee Strubinger introduces us to a Rapid City family hit hard by the virus.
Carrie Middletent still has side effects from a bout with COVID-19, which she caught more than 2 months ago. She still can't taste or smell things like she once could. Members of her family got the virus too. They're enrolled members of the Crow Creek tribe and live in Rapid City. For 3 days, she had a small cough and chest pressure.
So I thought I was actually feeling pretty good, but that's when I start getting really, really bad short of breath.
Then she developed a fever, cold sweats, and even fainted.
Just walking down the hallway, you know, and it feels like you're, you know, you just ran up a big old hill. You have to sit down or you're going to pass out.
14 family members got the virus. She and her mother had the worst symptoms. Both are diabetic. Middletent says they took her mother to the ER at Monument Health 3 times before she was admitted for 8 days. One of those was Mother's Day. Middletent wasn't sure her mother would make it. Carrie says her brother first got the virus, either from his construction job or while shopping at Walmart. They're not certain. Middletent says once her brother developed COVID symptoms, he tried to limit his contact with their mother and his kids. But soon, family members started to fall ill. The virus quickly spread through their family's 3 households.
We all had contact with my mother, and then, you know, whoever would have contact with me. But we were all family because we all thought we felt safe with each other. You know, we know who comes and goes in and out of our home, and we know the places, and we just know we were all being safe.
Middletent says because of the positive cases, her family needed to quarantine for 14 days. It was tough to keep enough food or supplies in the house. While state health officials recommend a quarantine after exposure to the virus, South Dakota has been more hands-off than other states in its response to the pandemic. Early on, Governor Kristi Noem said the state's rural nature and low population could be an asset as the pandemic worsened. All along, Noem says she's asked residents to be responsible, to stay home if they don't feel well, wash their hands often, and call their primary care doctor if they have symptoms. That approach won glowing reviews from conservative media outlets. Recently, the governor talked with the Minnesota-based Center of the American Experiment.
I did not order any businesses closed. I did not issue a shelter in place for families. So what I did was I gave them all the information that I possibly could, and then I reiterated to them the importance of personal responsibility, that I was going to give them the flexibility to make the best decisions to protect their families.
Some tribal governments are taking a different approach. For months, there have been checkpoints on roads leading to the Cheyenne River and Pine Ridge reservations. Tribal health officials say that lets them do contact tracing for coronavirus outbreaks. Geraldine Church is the CEO of the Great Plains Tribal Chairman's Health Board. It runs the Oyate Health Center in Rapid City. Church says urban Native Americans don't have the same protections.
In Rapid City, even though our population has the same risk factors as our relatives on the reservation, they're still subject to the environment where they're, none of that is being promoted or required. So it puts them at even higher risk, and we've seen that.
Census data show Native Americans make up 10% of the population in Pennington County. Great Plains Health Board statistics show tribal members make up 45% of confirmed COVID-19 cases. They make up 21% of COVID hospitalizations in the county and 28% of deaths.
It is, you know, impacting our population at a little bit higher proportion than other groups.
Church says the Native population is at more risk for contracting COVID-19 because many have underlying health conditions.
So if we have one family member come in, the likelihood of their entire household being infected is pretty high. It makes it really difficult for those families to get the services that they need. Many of them rely on public transportation, and it makes it difficult for them to convalesce.
In the eastern part of the state, COVID-19 has hit other communities of color. An early surge of cases at Smithfield Foods in Sioux Falls infected hundreds of meatpacking plant workers and their families. Most employees at Midwestern meatpacking plants are immigrants or refugees. Taniza Islam is the executive director of South Dakota Voices for Justice. She says a federal order that forced meatpacking plants to reopen put minority communities at risk.
Essential food production workers who must go to work and have absolutely no alternative, right? Their choice is bring a paycheck home, go to work, and get sick.
The State Department of Health does not have a racial breakdown of COVID cases from job-related outbreaks. It does track the overall cases at meatpacking operations. 853 Smithfield Foods workers contracted COVID-19. So did 171 workers at Demcota Ranch Beef in Aberdeen, 129 at Jack Link's in Alpena, and 105 at Dakota Provisions in Huron.
There are many communities, starting with indigenous populations to all of these immigrant communities that are working in these blue-collar jobs specifically, or any community that's working in blue-collar jobs who don't have that option for liberties that are completely overlooked.
We could say that social distancing is a luxury.
That's Drew Harris, a population health consultant from Philadelphia.
And we tell people, well, you've been exposed. Now you have to quarantine yourself for 14 days. Well, you're living in a home with five or six other relatives. It's a two-bedroom place. Everyone's sharing everything. How are you supposed to do that?
Harris says South Dakota is fortunate to have a low number of COVID cases so far. However, he says the pandemic has a larger lesson for us all.
And COVID has shined an incredibly bright light on the existing disparities and is taking the most vulnerable people in our society and victimizing them even worse than they were before by the existing prejudices and racism in our society.
Back in Rapid City, Carrie Middleton says she still has some COVID symptoms.
It's different now. It's difficult. I get tired real easy. And I just don't even do anything. I mean, I don't have to do anything just to feel that, you know. I mean, I try to motivate myself the best I could, but it's just really, it's harder now.
Middleton says her family had a rough experience.
I mean, I'm just glad we're all here and we got through it, you know, and we could tell our story. I don't want to get it a second time, you know. I mean, I actually don't think my body can handle it. And my mom already said that. She said, I don't think I can live through a second time.
Middleton says they're taking precautions, cleaning and disinfecting their homes and the vehicle her sons use to get to work. She makes sure they wear masks and use plenty of hand sanitizer. When family members visit, they meet outside and at a distance. In addition, she prays and burns sage, a traditional cleansing practice, to help keep her mind at ease. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strupinger in Rapid City.
Those are the stories from today. Be sure to follow SDPB News on Twitter and Facebook, and check out sdpb.org to read up on all of our news and politics coverage. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends. Together we can make a more civically engaged South Dakota. From the entire SDPB journalism team, I'm Josh Heyer. Thank you for listening.